Hebrews chapter 13, we're going to look at verse 4. We're dealing with the subject of marriage. Marriage. You know, last night we were sitting playing a board game at the house. Ask us like to play board games. We're mean to each other. We play a lot of them. And the particular board game we played a lot with Tim McVeigh. In fact, he's the one that taught it to us. And we're playing it, and Timothy was talking about Tim McVeigh's wife, and boy, I like it when she plays or whatever and such. And all of a sudden, he got very reflective. And he talked about Tim McVeigh and Zach Bird, and he said, you know, both of them really found very nice wives. And you're just thinking about that, very reflective. And I thought, I'm glad he saw that. I'm glad he understood it. I often have people in the church who are single who despair that anyone would ever want that. Okay? And I can assure you that, for example, Amber Vernon, if you were to take Rebecca McVeigh, they went through times in their life and thought Rebecca was 26 when she married, and thought to herself, well, probably no one will ever marry me. I'll just die an old maid. Well, now she's happily married. Well, not McVeigh, but she's married, all right? But there's Amber, pregnant, going to have a baby in August. Won't that be interesting having in your house? All right? I was telling Hannah, you know, you watch Hannah walk around and Hannah's like a stroll with a marble in the middle, being pregnant. Walking around with that baby in her. But I told her this morning, keep in mind that baby's the least amount of trouble now that it will be for the next 18 years. That's, you know, right now is the easy stage, all right? Bill Cosby talked about one of his coming out with a cocktail glass and a cigarette and who's in charge here, you know? You know, this is how I like to cry, and I like to do it 3 in the morning. Nobody can do it like Bill Cosby can say it. But the thing is, marriage is a wonderful thing. A wonderful thing. It's something that God gave man before man ever fell. Okay? Mankind was given marriage before man ever fell, and it's a touch of what can be in paradise. But if your marriage goes wrong, it's a touch of what can be in hell. There's nothing more agonizing than a marriage going south. I have people in here, you can tell stories of it. I'm not here to chasten, be angry. I'm just saying, you yourself could warn people, there's nothing more terrible than a marriage going south. The agony, the hurt that goes on. So important to have marriage right. I want you to look at Hebrews 13, verse 4. It says this, marriage is honorable in all. Didn't say, well, but if you've been divorced and remarried, it's not honorable. Didn't say that, okay? It said, marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. Now, there's a lot of preachers that mix that up. And they'll say, well, no matter what they do in bed, it's undefiled or whatever else. No, you're not taking goat from, you know, or whip to bed or whatever. Thinking that God's going to sanction that. In the Old Testament, under the law, when a man and a woman had marital relations, they actually were unclean, couldn't come into the house of God until they'd gone through ceremonial cleansing. That doesn't apply in the New Testament. The marriage bed is undefiled. There's nothing like that that makes it where they have to be separate now because they've had marital relations and set aside. It's a liberty that God has given to Christianity that most of the religions of the world do not have. They do not have that. The marriage bed is undefiled. Marriage is honorable in all. But then it says this, but whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. Now, that word monger, it's an old English word for sales. A fishmonger, somebody that sold fish down in the marketplace. A woodmonger sold wood. A whoremonger is somebody that sold whores. Pimp, okay? Whoremongers and adulterers, people having, they're breaking their marital vows and going outside of it, says God will judge. Now, I want to show you God's remedy for that. So we're going to turn now to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We're going to just start right from the beginning. Now, concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. You know, those barriers are somewhat broken down. I remember in the sixth grade, I had a teacher, my name is Mrs. Watson. She lived across from Limelight on Route 16, Machias. And I remember one time some of us boys looked at a girl's purse, and I'll never forget her stating that never again, ever, in her sight would any boy ever look at a girl's purse. That would never happen again. And I mean, when Mrs. Watson said it, you knew one thing, never again in her sight would any boy ever look at a girl's purse. That wasn't going to happen. It was just an old-fashioned sense of honor and sense. Now, I know all that's broken down today, but I also know people aren't happy. I know that. Make people miserable, make it break it down a lot of that thing. It's good for a man not to touch a woman. It's good. For one thing, it sets things off that you can't control. It sets them off. Now, what's God's remedy for that? Verse 2, nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Now, there's nothing nicer than to find the right person. The most wonderful thing in the world to find the right person. My prayer for every person in here is that you find that right person, or that God give you the contentment to live that single life. You have the right person, you have a tremendous gift in your life. Now, it says to avoid fornication. Now, fornication, sexual relations outside of marriage. To avoid that, let every man have his own wife. But then that delicious, wonderful statement, let every woman have her own husband. Last week, if you remembered, we dealt with the Lord Jesus Christ as being the prophet to Israel who had the authority to change the law. That statement right there is a change of law. Why? Because under that Old Testament, and unfortunately too many religions in the world today, a man could get a wife, wed her, and go marry another and bring her home. Say, hey, you two work it out. Okay? You two work it out. She didn't have her own husband. She had one she had to share. God set it up now where every woman has her own husband. It's not one she's got to share with somebody else. That's her own. That's one of the great liberties that is given in Christianity again. It's a liberty to the woman. Never again does she have to put up with that. With him just going out there and getting a harem and bringing them in and stacking them like cordwood. Now, in all seriousness, we've got, back in September, is in our young lady from the Gambia River coming in here. All right, Joanne Tompkins. Cattaraugus County Girls. Works on the Gambia River in Africa now as a single young lady serving the Lord. And she works with Muslim women who are wives of these multiple families. And she goes in and teaches them to read and how to take care of children in modern ways and this kind of stuff. And deals with them and such. And she said there, for example, you know, a man will have a hut in the middle, and there'll be three or four huts around, and each one's that woman with her children, and he'll take turns which hut he sleeps in, and or bring her to the master bedroom or whatever. Now, since the Bible's been, the New Testament's been written, no woman has to put up with that anymore. Okay? Let every woman have her own husband. He's yours, ain't nobody else can. Okay? Some of you women, you grab your husband by the ear, you ain't going nowhere, all right? You ain't getting nobody else. Well, that's like Ruth Ann. She grabs me by the ear, all right? And she has it more than one occasion. Usually it's not for love. But it's usually to get something straight that's not straight at the moment. And when we're done, it's real straight. All right, got it right, all right? All right, so go to verse 10. fact, let's get eight, just to get some context here. He says, I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them to abide even as I. Now, Paul, at one time, had a wife. It doesn't tell you how he lost her. But at one time, he had a wife, and anymore. And he said, under the marriage, he said, yet not I. Well, excuse me, let me read again. And I say, therefore, to the unmarried widows, it's good for them to abide, even as I. But if they cannot contain, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn. Now, does anybody hear me, that burn defined? Okay? You know, one of the problems in our society is we have fires out of control. It's out of control. And nothing is more miserable than to live a life when your fire's out of control. That is the most awful, miserable life you could possibly live, is to have sexual desires that are out of control, burning. It's a vile, disgusting life. You lose your self-respect. It hurts so bad, you go through depression, you go through everything else. God has a remedy. Find someone that will love you for the rest of your life. Now, I was no treasure 33 years ago. I look a lot better than I do now. My body was more fit, more teeth in my head, eyes weren't as bad, my hair wasn't gray. But I found somebody that would put up with me while I changed. I found somebody that, as my body deteriorated and it wasn't quite what it was, still has that love for me, still wants me, still desires me. We still have a romantic relationship. Okay? We still have a side to our life where doors need to be closed. I feel sorry for people who have marriages where that dies. I feel very, very bad for people who have that. Why? Because God's given you a gift where you never have to burn. You can have the satisfaction of someone who absolutely loves you. You want to see a person go through depression? You want to see a person go through the miseries such as you've never seen before? You find somebody that yielded their body to somebody in trust, and then that person betrayed them. Walked away, wouldn't stay with them. And there is a pain and there is an agony there that needs to be taught more in our society, and people more understand how bad that hurts. It just hurts so bad. People commit suicide over that pain. People, they'll go and make horrible mistakes, get into vile problems because of that pain. And God never intended you to ever, ever, ever live through that pain, ever. But somewhere, somebody told you the Bible's just old-fashioned. You don't have to follow it. You do whatever you want. Hey, you're a free person. You don't have to follow the Bible in the sense of your civic freedom. You can do whatever you want. Has anybody ever come in here where I've said, oh, no, you can't come in here. You live a different life. I've never told anybody that. I never will. But I've watched many a person come in this church with a miserable life that you wouldn't give to your worst enemy. The only cure I know is to get you with this Bible and to get you to learn what this Bible says and follow this Bible. And slowly straighten that life out and slowly take the pain away and slowly take the hurt away. To give you a life, beauty for ashes. The oil of joy where he used to mold. The garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness. But God can change that around. And one of the great gifts that God has given for that is marriage. That's one of the great gifts that God's given. Let me tell you something. Marry the right person, heaven on earth. At least it has been for me. I'm not so sure for my wife. But heaven on earth for me. Okay? You marry the wrong person, or handle your marriage wrong, hell on earth. Let me give two different words. A good match and a good marriage. They don't mean the same thing. Two people can come together who really are a good match for each other. You look at them and say to yourself, boy, that's a good match. But if they don't follow the rules common sense, charity one towards another, respecting each other, and giving in with each other, forgiving each other, that match will turn into a hellish marriage. And yet it was a good match. Two people who really should have been together. I would rather have two people poorly matched and teach them to behave one with another. Teach them to respect one another. Teach them how to long suffer each other. Teach them how to forgive each other. Teach them how to do that, and I can take a poor match and make a good marriage out of it. You realize around the world today, if you were to talk to a born-again Christian in Nepal, now there aren't a lot of them, but there are some. People who are traveling and professional or whatever, became born-again Christians, born-again Christians in, say, the mountains of China, India, Pakistan, there are such people. They are scandalized at how Americans marry. Absolutely scandalized that you'll just go out there and pick your own mate. They think that's the most simple thing they ever heard of. I've heard them talk about it. You know why? Because they see the divorce rate amongst Americans. And they say, what a terrible thing to do to people. So instead, they wait for their parents to pick out the right mate. Now, I myself don't do that. I would not have had the wisdom that, say, Hannah and Eric had in coming together. I wouldn't have had that wisdom. I don't think I'd have had the wisdom to put Amy and Dale together. Okay? Wouldn't have had that wisdom. But in a society that does that, the marriages prove over and over again to be happier marriages. You know why? Because along with that parental authority came a training of how to respect your spouse. How to do that. Back in 1980, when I first moved to Columbia, South Carolina, I had a boss that I worked for who was one of the most crooked people I ever worked for in my life. I mean, this guy was on the take and stealing things from all over the place and such. I mean, this guy was as crooked as a dog's hind leg. This guy was an absolute cheat. You know, they make stories of Southern businessmen and that, but one of his ways he would punish a competitor would be to defile the competitor's wife, get her into an adulterous affair, and then take pictures and expose her. I mean, this guy was sick, okay? And I mean, but he had a wife that he treated like a princess. His wife would come in and he treated her like a princess, and one day I said to him, I said, Tim, I said, you treat everybody terrible, you're a crook, and I said, but I noticed you treat your wife properly. And I said, why is that? And he said, my father was the fifth most decorated man the United States Army ever had. He had been a prisoner of war in two wars, both World War II and the Korean War. He had been a prisoner of war both. His father was absolutely a knockdown, dragged-out Army Ranger in the 1950s. Prince Sihanouk, the United States Army, sent Tim Walker's father, Porter Walker, into Cambodia to bring him out of a Chinese-controlled area and bring him into a free area. Tim said this, he said, I eloped with my wife when we were both 16, I brought her home, and he said, one day I said something to her in front of my father, and he said, my father dragged me into the backyard and beat me every which way, and when I laid there on the ground, he explained to me, if I ever talked to my wife that way again, what he was going to do to my body. And he said, my father's been dead 10 years, and I still don't treat her wrong. Okay? An old-fashioned thing, some old-fashioned common sense. Treat your wife properly. So as horrible as that man was, oddly enough, that marriage worked. Okay? Oddly enough, that marriage worked. Now the thing is, that's a skill that's missing today. The skill to first of all find the right mate. The skill. How to find that right mate. John Mark. You want to know why John Mark ran to North Carolina? He thinks that maybe that young lady down there is the right one. And I finally told him to go find out. And I'll tell you a few things. He ain't going to find out by taking her to bed. You, after you take someone to bed, you can't even see them anymore. You're so blind, you're completely blind to who they are after that. You're deceived. You cannot understand anymore. I used to tell kids, walk up here and put your nose on this wall. Now describe that wall. Well, they'll see minute little things that, say, you guys can't see out there, but they can't see the whole wall. You want the whole wall described, get somebody back here that can describe that whole wall. And it used to be that when two people came together, they stood afar off for a while until they could study each other's lives and know each other's lives and know what that person was before they ever came that close together. Now what happens is they come together just like this and they never see the whole person. Until they've gone through the agony of the revelation of what that person is and who that person is and realize, I don't even like that. But what's even worse is realizing they don't like you. What an awful thing to go through. I can't imagine what it would be like if I woke up one morning and realized that this woman did not like me. I can't even begin to imagine the horror that would go on in my life. That she didn't like me. Part of the skill in finding a mate is staying separate from that mate until you know who they are as a person. And then never be joined with them physically until you vow one to another that you'll never leave each other. And then if your whole life falls apart, you'll stay together. Ruthann and I have a friend of ours. One of the single most beautiful girls I've ever met in my life. But for the last 15 years, her husband has sat in a wheelchair. And she's cleaned every bowel movement he's had. He drools down the side of his mouth. Didn't wear a helmet on a motorcycle. He drools down the side of his mouth. He talks to him. How you doing, buddy? You know the doctors told her? Put him in a nursing home. You know why? They whispered in her ear, one of the nurses did, he'll get pneumonia and die in 6 months, he'll be free. You know what she said? We married for better or for worse. We married for better or for worse. He trusted me when we got married. He trusted me that I'd take care of him, and she's kept him as comfortable as can be. Absolutely does everything she can, pushes him in the cooler parts of the house, sets him in front where he can watch these videos and he hardly understands but the entertainment. If you don't have somebody that'll do that, don't marry him. Don't marry him. Don't yield yourself to him. Don't give yourself to him. Better than you spend your whole life with no one ever having defiled you and hurt you so that you don't have to go through the depressions. The misery of broken love. It's an awful misery. I would to God that no one ever has to suffer broken love. It's just too terrible. Look at verse 27, if you would. Paul talking about marriage. Art thou bound unto a wife? Seek not to be loose. Okay? Are you bound to a wife? Seek not to be loose. Art thou loose from a wife? Seek not a wife. Well, look at this next verse. But, and if thou marry, thou hast not sinned. Now, Dale will tell you stories of the sin in his first couple marriages. But it wasn't sin for him to marry. That wasn't sin. I had other people in here who had to do divorces. It's a terrible thing. They themselves will tell you how bad it hurt. But when they married again, they didn't sin. Seek not a wife, but even if thou marriest, thou hast not sinned. Why is marriage honorable at all? They didn't sin marrying again. That's not a sin to do that. Don't let anybody tell you it is. And yet Jesus Christ said, and we looked at it last week, if you marry her that's put away, you commit adultery. Kind of tough to reconcile those two together, isn't it? Okay? The damage has already been done. The hurt has already been done. Put your marriage together. Put that marriage together and make it work. I have people tell me, well, I've been married 1, 2, 3, 4 times. I don't care how many times you've been married before. I want this to be the last one. Okay? I've had a couple people under my ministry that I have accelerated their divorces. Gone up to them and said, just get it done, get it over. It's obvious it's not going to work. It's obvious the other partner doesn't want any part of this. Be done with it. Be over. And I help them to do it. I hate that. God hates divorce. I had a friend of mine one time that on the Russian front, his job was to cut people's legs off and their arms off. He was a medic. Working for the free white Czechoslovakians. They don't like they were the non-communists. And he said what you had to do was take a man and take all the liquor you could and put it into him. And everybody sit on top of him. You take out just an ordinary wood saw and chop his leg off. And he said if you couldn't get him out enough, his buddy would sit on his chest and keep hitting him in the face while you're doing it. Chop that leg off. What do you think? You think he enjoyed that? I didn't enjoy that. But you know what? Sometimes those things have to be done. I don't enjoy it when people are in the midst of a divorce. I hate it. Sometimes those things need to be done. I understand that. I'm not here to force those. And I know that when that marriage happens, it's different. Watch this. Verse 28. But, and if thou marry, thou hast not sinned, and if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh, but I spare you. Now, here's the thing. If you've had a number of marriages before, or another marriage, and got children and that kind of stuff in it, you have trouble in the flesh that the average marriage doesn't have. Doesn't mean it can't work, but it's trouble in the flesh. It's not easy having stepchildren. It's not easy being a stepchild. It's not easy dad being married to another woman and mom being married to another man. It's not easy. That is painful. It hurts. It hurts all your life what you have to put up with, how you handle holidays, how you handle birthdays, how you handle old memories. It hurts. It hurts. It hurts. The Apostle Paul said, such shall have trouble in the flesh. And it's there. But you didn't sin. Sin's done. It's over. It's gone. You can't wallow in it. It's something. Hey, mistakes were made. Awful things happened. But make the marriage you have now work. And just realize that yes, there is more trouble. It's going to be a little harder in the flesh than what it used to be. It's not going to be what it was. I've got some people in here who hurt even today. They hurt. They hurt. They hurt because love has gone wrong. They hurt because they're lonely. I got people in here that hurt because of just life situations. And I don't have a magic pill to take out the hurt away right now. What I do have is a lifestyle that if you live it, God will heal the hurts. You'll find yourself living happy again. I remember one time going down to Machias, sitting there with Jerry Haynes, preacher down there for the Friendship Church. He's known me since 1959. And I sat with him 10 years ago and I said, Jerry, I don't believe I will ever be happy again. Jerry said to me, he said, John, I'm telling you, you will be. You will be happy again. The day will come and happiness will come back. You know what we learned? We learned that you go through a day where that you forgot you were sad. It was just kind of happy that day. And then the next day it all comes back again, all the torment, all the sorrow. And then all of a sudden a miracle happens. You go through 2 days in a row where nobody was sad. 2 days in a row where your morale was high. 2 days in a row. And then it all comes back. Then, oh my goodness, miracle of miracles, 3 days in a row where the depression didn't eat us up and the memories didn't eat us up and all the bitterness didn't eat us up. And we actually were happy and normal for 3 whole days in a row. Then they come where a whole week goes by where that happens to you. Now, I don't know if I've ever had 14 days in a row where that happened. I don't know if I've ever had. I don't know if I've ever had 14 days in a row where some bitterness or depression or sorrow didn't overtake me. The memories of the past or whatever. You know what I've learned? I can string together day after day after day of a carefree, happy life. You know what else I've learned? You can do the same thing. You can string that together. You're going to have to start by following some common sense, follow that Bible, follow what it says, and know that God can give you a life. But if you want to wreck your life, forget the rules. Just go sleep with anybody you want to, marry anybody you want to, do anything you want, and you want to know what? Your life will be so miserable and awful. But if you'll wait for God, for God, for God, for God to give the right person. 7-8 months ago, Monica Bradfield stood up here, and her husband, Mark Bradfield, stood up here. They never met until they were 40. Neither one had ever married, ever. Both of them came to each other as virgins at 40 years old. Hollywood mocks that kind of thing. But you want to know what? Over the years, Monica had set a standard and said, this is what I'll marry. Over the years, Mark had set a standard and said, this is what I'll marry. Can you imagine if they'd broken those standards and had to go through 15 to 20 years of hating and misery and then come across the right person and it's too late because you blew it? Don't do that. Wait for the right person. When I first decided that I was going to marry within the church, marry somebody who wanted the things of God, I thought I'll never meet such a person. But you know what I made up my mind? I'm not going to run around looking for one. I made up my mind I'm just going to do what's right and sit in the house of God and do what's right and sit there. One day a man sat next to me. God brought her in. God brought her in on God's time. She ain't been able to shake me since. Ladies, let's have a song. Hey, do be careful when you walk downstairs. That floor is sweat a little bit, so be careful when you walk down there. And please keep the kids from running around the side. Yeah, okay.